You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Eyewitnesses have described a wall of fast-flowing water that appeared before them like an inland tsunami.
We do need to brace ourselves for the likelihood of further bad news.
40 people were winched by helicopter from their rooftops overnight.
You have seen the awful footage from Queensland, Australia. People, cars, indeed whole towns swept away in fast-moving floods. The area impacted was the size of France and Germany combined. Three river systems filled up and powerful waters damaged the city of Brisbane. It is not the first time. In 1974, Cyclone Wanda flooded Brisbane. But in the last 12 months, flash floods hit all over the world, from Brazil through Pakistan to Sri Lanka. It is hardly normal weather, but is it climate change? From Australia, I'm pleased to have Professor Matthew England on the line. He's from the Climate Change Research Centre at the University of New South Wales in Sydney. Matthew, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be with you.
We'll get to that climate question in just a minute, but to start with, what are your impressions about these Queensland floods and what it means to Australia now?
Yeah, these are very devastating floods. Brisbane is one of our largest cities in Australia. There's lots of infrastructure built up right by the river there, and the floods there are the worst since 74, and before that it was not back till early 20th century, 60, 70, 80 years ago. And even in the 30 years since the last floods, a lot of very low-lying infrastructure was built up on that river system, so there's massive damage, and of course there's been loss of life, and the whole state of Queensland is reeling from this event, and there's a massive cleanup underway as we speak.
I think people around the world are feeling for Australians at this time. What is the meteorological explanation for these floods?
Yeah, the main thing going on here for this season is a very strong La Nina event. It's probably the strongest on record, or the second, depending on how you measure a La Nina event. La Nina events are characterized by quite cool water in the central and east Pacific Ocean across towards the US, and then much warmer water north of Australia. So that's the first main reason, but there is very likely to be a climate change signal in there as well, because the waters north of Australia are particularly warm this year. They're actually the warmest ever measured. And the warmth of those waters dictates just how strong the monsoon seasons are. The fact that they're the warmest on record, it's not surprising that the summer rains up in northern Australia have been as intense as they've been.
So why do warming oceans lead to more flooding on land?
Yeah, so a warmer ocean, I mean, basically the oceans provide the energy for the monsoon system. So the rain systems that you see in the tropics over South America, over Africa and over Australia, Indonesia and so on, these very heavy rains that occur in the summertime, they're driven by the warmth of the oceans. And put simply, the warmer the oceans in the tropics, the more intense the rainfall patterns are. So if you warm the oceans, whether it's via a La Nina event, north of Australia, or via global warming, you do tend to put more moisture into the atmosphere, and that drives more intense rainfall.
We tend to think about increasing heat on land, like the Moscow fires this year, but I guess a lot of this greenhouse-caused warming is going into the sea. Are scientists monitoring these ocean temperatures around Australia on a regular basis?
Yeah, globally there's a whole program to keep a really close eye on the temperatures of the oceans, because you're right to say that global warming, a lot of the warming we trap with greenhouse gases is being absorbed by the oceans. And that's a tremendous thing, because it's actually reducing the rate of global warming on the planet dramatically. I'd argue it's also a dangerous thing, because it actually gives people a sense of complacency, in the sense that the rate of warming is relatively gradual, and there is payback. And what I mean by that is we can't just see the oceans absorb this heat without any downstream impact. And what I refer to there is, firstly, something like global sea level rise. As the oceans warm, they expand. But also, as we're seeing at the moment, intense floods can result from a warmer ocean. Over in North America, we saw Hurricane Katrina a couple of years ago. The energy of that storm system was driven by very warm waters in the Gulf of Mexico. They were so unusually warm that it was either a freak once in 1,000 year event, or it had to be driven by long-term climate change. So these sorts of events, increased flooding events, global sea level rise, and also effects on ecosystems with the warmer ocean, these are the sorts of things that we have to face up to as our reality for the future because of this ocean absorption of heat.
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point, because many of us may not be feeling all that hot where our weather is right now, but it just keeps building and building and building in the ocean, and we expect 50, 100 years from now this heat is still going to be coming out of the seas. Is that correct?
Yeah, look, people are still, this issue is complicated, because even the fact that we have a seasonal cycle on the planet, you mentioned the cold weather that parts of the US and North America and Canada and Europe have experienced this winter. I mean, every single year we have a summer and winter cycle, and psychologists have surveyed people, and coming out of summer, you know, the acceptance of global warming science is markedly higher than when people come out of winter, and that's ridiculous in some sense, because we know that the seasonal cycle has been there since the planet first formed billions and billions of years ago. The seasonal cycle does not change the basic science of global warming. A cold winter here or there is what we expect to continue seeing, but the overall picture of a gradually warming planet, decade by decade, a warming planet is what we're expecting to see, and it's exactly what we've seen for the past century and what we're projecting to see over the next century, unless emissions of greenhouse gases come right down.
Professor England, the floods are surprising some of us outside Australia. We just absorb the images of long-standing drought and bushfires. How can global warming cause drought and flooding?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The way global warming will work, and all of the models agree on this on a kind of global scale, is that the tropics will tend to get wetter as we go forward in time, and we've seen that, an example of that over Brazil and parts of Queensland and Northern Australia this summer. Whereas in the subtropics, and what I mean by that is that's the sort of latitudes that are about 30 to 40 south and 30 to 40 north, those latitude bands are expected to dry progressively over the next 50 to 100 years, and then further towards the high latitudes, like up towards 50, 60 north and 50, 60 south, we're seeing increased precipitation. That's a bit of a mouthful for your listeners to digest, but the bottom line, the shorter way to put this, is that the world's hydrological cycle is expected to be enhanced and increased and invigorated under global warming, and the average hydrological cycle is one of high rainfall at the tropics. We have the desert latitudes at about 30 to 40 or 30 south, 30 north, and then we have much higher rainfall at about 60 south and 60 north. Now, those latitude bands of high rain, low rain, high rain, we're expecting them to be even enhanced. So where it's already wet now, it'll be even wetter. Where it's dry, it'll tend to be drier. So for Australia, the example you mentioned, by and large, the region south, along the south of Australia, so parts of Victoria, where we have severe bushfires only a couple of years ago of the order of 50 or so fatalities, that part of Australia, by and large, we're expecting to become drier. To the north in the tropics, we're expecting to become wetter. And this will progress gradually, and of course there are always year-to-year variations. The current La Nina has seen a downpour of rain over Victoria, where only 2 years ago they had severe bushfires, and this is just a La Nina cycle superimposed on the long-term average. So people are forever confusing long-term trends, decade-by-decade trends, with year-to-year variations, and even the seasonal cycle. I mean, there's nothing more ridiculous than hearing a radio commentator here in Australia or elsewhere come along on a cold day and say, gee, it's a cold day, where's global warming today? This is just such a misunderstanding and a confusion between weather, which is day-to-day variations, and climate, which is the long-term, decade-to-decade progression of the climate system.
Yeah, I'd expect my dog or cat to make that mistake, but hopefully not humans. We know that winter and summer come, but the overall pattern of it is what we're talking about with climate change. Now, the business newspapers mainly reported on the loss of coal exports as railways flooded out. I wonder, what will it take before Australians themselves demand an end to coal exports to save what's left of a dependable climate? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was a really ironic aspect of this that some of the coal mines actually flooded as well, and there was a sort of a ceasing of operations there for a while, and I mean a lot of businesses were hit. But to see Australia still so reliant on coal, and to see the rate at which politicians are pushing forward changes on that front is concerning. Australia has among the highest per capita emissions of greenhouse gases on this planet. And the time for us to position for a new economy with low-carbon technologies, solar power, for example, is a fantastic potential resource here for Australia. You know, the time for us to move to these technologies is now. And, you know, we can't wait for other nations to change. The writing's on the wall that the world economy is going to go towards low-carbon. So there are some very, very good policymakers trying to push this through at the moment in Australia, trying to convince the electorate that the way to go is to put a price on carbon and to drive innovation in the renewable energy sector. I've been on a report recently that's being submitted directly to the Prime Minister and Cabinet that makes these very specific recommendations about trying to position for a low carbon economy for the future, securing Australia's climate. We already live in a very harsh environment for our climate. If we go on in a climate change world, we're going to see even more extremes and more costly infrastructure required to deal with things like severe droughts and bushfires and floods and so on. So there are moves in the right direction by people with all the right intentions. My concern is that we still have the electorate, you know, when it comes to elections here in Australia, we still have politicians getting pretty short sound bites in there, like, you know, say no to a carbon tax and let's not put a price on carbon. This is just the government's ripping you off. There's a real fear campaign out there trying to derail the process. And it's having an effect because the average person on the street doesn't necessarily appreciate the scale of the climate problem. They don't appreciate the kind of costs we're going to have in the future. And they also have a fear that a price on carbon will ruin the economy, when in fact folks like Nick Stern and Ross Gunno here in Australia have shown that putting a price on carbon should drive a growth in the economy, not hamper progress.
Really, it would be beautiful to see Australia powered by all that solar power that you do have, and to be a world leader in exporting, sustainable energy instead of coal. Our guest has been Professor Matthew England from the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.